Podcast with your hosts, Paki and Chris. We are people who are passionate about business, success, and culture, and this is our platform to showcase the people in our city who make it happen. On today's podcast, we're going to be discussing building a successful software development firm, technology, and business meetups with the founder of and CEO of Innovate, Tech Alley, and also Integly. Hope I said those all right.
Yeah, we'll you got get one it. Out of two.
One out of two, right? Yeah. We got Mr. Joshua Levitt. So welcome to the circle, man.
Welcome. Welcome. I'm excited. This is great to meet you. And I'm excited to sort of share ideas here.
Yeah. So we got a chance to talk over the phone. We got to first give a shout out to some friends of ours, Leticia and Angel from Live to Give. We appreciate her, you know, connecting you guys with us. But let's kind of jump right in. You kind of got an interesting story where you kind of have a little bit of a tech background. And you kind of form some of these companies now. To be able to develop some of these junior developers and things like that. So I wanted to kind of first start off with Innovate, and you got to say it the right way.
Ionovate.
Yeah. Okay, I've murdered that. Can you kind of talk about what your company Ionovate does?
You know, I think the big sort of description is that we are trying to make local talent attractive. Okay. You know, you hear this, right? You hear that, and this is according to LVGA, which is our economic development group here in Southern Nevada. Their blueprint says, software development is the biggest occupation in demand in Southern Nevada, right? And the problem is that I don't think they're looking for these entry-level developers. They're looking for these senior developers. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of new startups forming and coming here, sure. And so on. And so they want this talent, and they're saying, hey, we can't find it in Las Vegas. Well, it's here. I think the problem is that it's here, and they're working in the casino, or they're doing something else, right? Yeah. Because they have to find other jobs. But it's around. So the thought process that I had was let's find out why companies aren't hiring local talent, mitigate that reason, and then bring those entry level developers in order to find opportunity for jobs. And that's what we did. So we're basically a launching pad. Mm-hmm. So we find clients that are looking for employees. Or they are looking to get a product launched. We hire entry-level developers that have a skill set to get them there. And then we hire an intermediary senior developer to act as a go-between between the junior and that company.
Got it.
And so from the company's perspective, they're working with the senior, but the junior is doing all of the work, right? Now, the beauty of it is we blend that rate so that the price is competitive with the international market.
Yeah, and you kind of see Vegas as becoming like more of a, like we have to cultivate that talent, or do you think it's more ingrown talent that we're kind of getting from other cities like California or Washington, or say
like California, Washington, or are we more of an attractive place or destination, or was it more we'd be more cultivating that talent?
I think it's both. I think that there's a big effort into bringing like that talent out there, but like I said, it's there. I may be in the minority, but I think our school district does an amazing job. Mm-hmm. You know, you say, hey, Josh, but it's ranked 50th in the country. But you got to look at the metrics that it looks at, and one of them is the chances for success. They don't look at the kids; they look at the parents, and just by the fact of our economy. We're a service industry. You don't need to have a college degree to make $100,000 here. Mm-hmm. You can do it as a bartender, right?
That's true. Yeah.
So the country looks over here and they say, all right, well, who has what kind of post-secondary education? Well, it's very freaking low in Vegas. What kind of jobs do they have? Well, it's this type of jobs and so on and so forth. So they say, all right, well, you're 50th in the country now because the chances of success for your kids are pretty low. And I get that because my oldest son went to UNR. He wanted to be a lawyer.
Okay.
I said, brilliant. Love it. I didn't know nothing about lawyering, but I'll pay for your tuition. And he got about a year and a half in there, and he changed his major to business. Well, happens to be something I'm interested in, right?
Sure.
So, of course, we're talking macroeconomics, and we're talking about marketing, and I'm able to help him out. And I realized at that point that this issue, the chances for success, isn't an economic issue. It's simply what's my support system. So, I mean, people don't know this. We have the world champion robotics program in Southern Nevada, in Las Vegas.
I did not know
Cimarron.
That.
I did not know that.
Cimarron High School. They are the world champ. They basically retired them as basically you guys are the world champions. They're the ones that created the robotic competition popularity.
Cimarron High School.
High School.
That's awesome. I never knew that.
No one knows that, right?
Yeah.
But the question is now they go they do all this. They do programming, engineering, you know, so on and so forth. Then they go to their parents as an example and say, hey, I want to go into software development. What do I do? I have no idea, but I can get you busboy job, making $50 a year. Okay, right? And so that's sort of the scenario you're running into. So I think we have a tremendous amount of talent. I think our schools are kicking that talent out. The question is how are you able to get them into, you know, that next career so that they can shine, right?
Yeah. You kind of see that shifting. I think personally, I always hear about it, you know, during the last recession and now obviously the challenges with COVID, you know, we have to diversify from our hospitality economy. And, you know, I think you are seeing the two that kind of consistently come up is healthcare and technology, that's the really Vegas needs to push in that direction. Mm-hmm. So do you think now that the city's recognizing it from that standpoint, that they are starting to more in these development programs at the high school and middle school level?
I think they've been doing it for a while. Now, what really got me on the kick of workforce development is I was a CIO for a helicopter company here locally.
Oh, okay.
And I needed talent, right?
Okay.
And really it came from, at that time, they had a new Nevada initiative where they were saying, it was Sandoval, who was the governor at the time, was saying, we want to have Tesla coming in. We're going to have this big diversifying our economy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And they had this whole entire idea about entrepreneurism, technology jobs, bringing companies that they're going to hire these folks and so on. And so, you know, again, that's when I was looking at what we were trying to accomplish. And I said, well, if I can't find talent, you know, we're going to be in big trouble because talent's an accelerator of business, right?
For sure. Yeah.
Or maybe I can't even afford a talent because I didn't know it at the point because I was already having a hard time finding a talent. So that's where I started visiting high schools and asking questions. Who here has family that is in the technology business? And no one would raise their hand. And I got familiar with the programs that schools had out there and meeting, you know, the youth and trying to be a mentor and so on. So basically my point is I think the state of Nevada tried that and they really pushed it. And then it was going in that direction. You can see Reno is huge entrepreneur.
Yeah, very much so.
Right.
Yeah.
In fact, when the recession hit, I think a small amount of people, sure, the casinos went out, but the small amount of their economy was affected by it.
Yeah, yeah.
Vegas,
they still did very well.
It was huge amount of our population was affected by COVID. And I think that sort of put the emphasis on the current the mayor of that or the governor at that point, we need to really repush entrepreneurism. Yeah. And you're seeing the new governor sort of saying that same sort of thing. It's all about entrepreneurism. Yeah. It's all about training. It's all about so on. So I think that, Vegas was going toward that direction and then sort of shifted because, you know, I think the state sort of had some influence on that. And now it's going back into that. Yeah. We need to have a diversified economy.
No, I love it. I love the fact that some of the things you're doing, which we'll get into like Tech Alley and things like that, but you got the first Nevada apprenticeship program, right? You've been awarded. Can you talk
software
a little
developer
bit about that?
Apprenticeship.
Okay. So how did that come about?
Yeah. So that was actually something I was working on years ago. And just to put some perspective in place, I was a CIO for a company and I left that and I started working for a nonprofit that focused on getting IT career jobs for people.
Okay.
And during that time as a director, we put together a software development program. And so the big focus that I had, one, because it was our mission as a nonprofit, was these people have to get jobs if they go through the program. Plus we were charging everything. All the other programs were free. This one was $13,000. Right.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, that's a lot of friggin' money to be spending on something like this. So it's my obligation that everybody that graduates out of this program can find a job. So I was really hyper-focused on one of the ideas that we came up with was, an apprenticeship.
Okay.
Now the state didn't like a non-traditional apprenticeships, technology apprenticeships. At least that's what I understood. The previous governor was pushing it. And just so him, I don't follow politics. I'm just sort of, but he was pushing it. And then like the new governor, I don't think really had a big emphasis on it. So, technology apprenticeships were sort of removed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had to come up with this really interesting, I wouldn't say interesting, but this apprenticeship model in software development that was attractive to businesses, was attractive to apprentices, and was attractive to the council that had to approve apprentices in the state of Nevada. So we came up with this idea. COVID hit, it dropped. You know, I eventually left the nonprofit, started my own businesses. And about a year later, I suppose, maybe two, this LVGA and some others reached out and said, hey, we're trying to put the software developer apprenticeship program. Do you have any insights? I said, let me pull this thing out of my drawer. Here's this thing we put together. And they liked it. And so after we got the standards all drafted and so on, they needed a sponsor. And that's just a consequence of apprenticeships. You need to have a sponsor.
Yeah.
And I think usually those are like unions or maybe employers. Technology doesn't have a union. So I was the schmuck said, all right, I'll do it. I'll be the sponsor of it. Didn't realize how hard that thing was, man.
Extremely hard.
You have to go in front of council. You have to get approved. You have to, find employers. You got to find apprentices. You got to find funding and you have to put all of that together. But it took over a year of working through that whole entire process. And we finally got the first software developer apprentice in the state of Nevada, registered software developer
awesome.
In the state of Nevada. Now we have two more that just got just got job offers. So once one happens, you know, everybody, no one wants to be first, right? Once one happens, it sort of falls through. So we're really, really excited about that. I think it's going to open a lot of opportunities for more software developers looking for jobs. That's all about just making it attractive, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
You have to find value props in order to get all these groups engaged. But two, I think it's going to open the door for more apprenticeships that can be a little more creative than this one. I think this mm-hmm. one is very standard boilerplate apprentice, as if it could even fit within a labor, occupation, but it's just mm-hmm. software development.
And you actually work with a lot of startups, right? That's kind of your kind of repertoire.
Yeah, I like to hang out. I like to hang out with entrepreneurs. Man, their brains are wired differently, man. So
for sure. Yeah.
So hanging out with them is really a lot of fun.
It's like, I'm curious, do you consider your expertise more on the business entrepreneurship side, or is it on the software development side?
Well, I'm not a software developer.
Got it.
And I laugh about that, right? Because we say, you helped start a software development school, and I ran that, and I have like two software development companies, but I do not know how to code.
Got it. All right.
Yeah.
But you understand the logistics and all of that stuff.
Maybe, right? Operation, I don't know, man. Again, software developer is a different brain set, right? Yeah. As a CIO, is more architecture mm-hmm. or sort of side and business side. Mm-hmm. You know, we had some software developers, but it was one of those where you just let those guys and girls do their creative thing, right? Because it's just something I'm not talented at.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of hard because you think like the barrier of entry. I think that's the thing. I know it's like you said, you mentioned earlier about your parents not knowing where to go when you're wanting to get into software development. To me, it was always the biggest thing is when you see it, it seems like it's a foreign language because coding essentially is trying to learn a new language of how to process and do things. Sure. Mm-hmm. And do you think that is what the biggest barrier of entry from your experience is, that people are afraid to jump into it, or they don't even know the steps it takes to get into that environment?
I think that software development's like a carpenter. It's just an art mm-hmm. where every solution is solved. For carpenter, it's wood, right?
Yeah.
And software, it's everything is an application. Business, everything's a product.
Yeah.
Right.
Like plugging and playing.
That's what I like about hanging around entrepreneurs, right? They can look at some sort of interesting situation and go, wait, we can make some money on this. Right? This is coming to me. And you're like, wow, how the hell did you do that? Right. Yeah. You know, software developers, they sort of have that same attitude. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when I had the coding school, I would, you know, we had to fill those seats, but I wouldn't accept everyone because it was like $13,000. I didn't want to take $13,000 if I didn't think you were going to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so either I say, hey, you might have an interest, but have you dabbled into this at all? I mean, mm-hmm. do you sure you want us, you know, and we would sort of, have them go to some meetups and so on, just to ensure this is something they wanted mm-hmm. to do. And I think that was a good thing, to be a steward of that, if that's the right term, but I wouldn't call it gatekeeping, but I think it is an advisor. I don't want people to spend money on this, I want to be a software developer one day and not really know what it's about.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. And you found the need. It seems like you came out with this actual business in 2020, from my understanding, right? Right during the middle of the pandemic?
Oh,
right before that.
Yeah. So I had actually pitched it to the coding school as a way to get people jobs. Say, hey, why don't we have, in between cohorts, you have the senior developer act as the senior lead for this thing, and we'll do these contracts for people. And they weren't into it.
Okay.
So I was like, well, that's a bummer. I thought that was a pretty good idea. And then COVID happened, and I was like, well, I had this ideas here. The company already told me to screw off.
Yeah.
So let's just see what happens. And I never meant to make any money on it, right? The whole idea was, let's just prove that this could work. Mm-hmm. And I sell the model to everybody. I don't care. I'm like, why aren't you guys doing this? This should be the new way of employing new talent. Mm-hmm. And so I give it away, but it makes enough money now. I'm enjoying it, but I still don't expect it to be, the thing retires me. I hope that lots of companies adopt it, and we start getting a lot of jobs for new developers.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so do you transition to Tech Alley? I was reading about Tech Alley, and that's the startups and meetups as far as softwares and things like that. Yeah. How did that all come about? And
so again, I had this coding school, mm-hmm. and I would give, I'd give the space out to meetups, right?
Okay.
For a couple of reasons. One, I was like, hey, this could be a good advocate for the community. Mm-hmm. And say, yeah, of course, use the space too. It's mm-hmm. great marketing for software developers, right?
100%.
Yeah, people coming into your campus. Mm-hmm. And three, it was great for the students to interact with people within the field as well. Mm-hmm. So I got to know a lot of the meetups that were happening. And then one day, a guy came in from Irvine. His name's Joseph Hakler. Really great guy. But he came in one day and said, hey, I heard this is the tech scene. I said, sure is, man. There's a meetup on Tuesday with Java, and Wednesday there, yada, yada, yada. He goes, no, I'm looking for that one place where everybody's coming together to exchange ideas. I was like, well, we don't have that, but that planted the seed.
Yeah, always.
And
yeah.
You know, so there was sort of all these discussions around, you know, can we put something together, or almost like he described it, a flea market of sharing.
Okay.
And then you know, obviously when COVID hit, I had more time to, you know, to work really on that and put that together, and I formed basically a Tech Alley Council, where just a couple of people in the community that said, hey, let's see if we can put this together. And we were working on ideas, right? It was still COVID, so we're looking at maybe could we do this through Zoom or something. And then the governor, you know, ended the mask mandate. And 3 weeks later, man, I hosted the first Tech Alley. I coordinated with the city. I said, hey, you're bringing people in from out of the state to sort of check out the city. I said, what if I put an event together where I had some meetups and the tech scene comes together, and now they can sort of get this community? Because I told them, I said, you're doing a good job bringing them here, but how are you going to keep them? And they said, okay, if you can do it in 3 weeks, man, we made it happen. And through the first event, I don't think we planned on it being the third Saturday every month, but that just happened to be the week that ended. I said, well, it's going to be that's the third Saturday of every month is how we're going to keep it. So awesome. Shortly after, we hosted our first one. I think we had 40 people. The second one, we had 80. And I thought, that's a lot of people. I probably should legitimize this, make it into a nonprofit.
Okay.
And, you know, that way, you know, we can sustain this thing. Okay. And see what happens. And that's how Tech Alley, occurred.
So you're actually in three states now, right? So my understanding, you're in Vegas, Reno, and it was a Denver?
Three cities. Yeah.
Three
yeah.
cities. I'm
Two
sorry.
States. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And so, Vegas, Reno, and Denver. Okay. And we're looking at Salt Lake next.
Awesome.
And it's not so much me going, all right, I want to expand and take over, but it's like, we have this pretty cool idea and this really neat model that follows three principles. And that it has to be inclusive, meaning anybody can participate, has mm-hmm. to be accessible, which is why it's free, and it has to be consistent. And other than that, sort of build it to whatever that community itself needs. Mm-hmm. We give a lot of freedom to the licensees of it.
Okay.
Reno found a need for it. It was up in Reno. Denver found a need for it. Someone as a community builder mm-hmm. said, we'd like it, and they have a need from it. You know, in Vegas, we didn't have a tech community. We had one like in 2010, 12, you know, when Tony Shea was doing stuff. And I see this as just an extension of what they built mm-hmm. at that point. The whole idea is it's almost fully community run. I tell people it's the easiest job ever. I just facilitate, pay for the venues and the food and help with the marketing and try to make people popular. But really the meetups are the ones that run it. I don't do anything else. I just network and have a great time. Reno, they had a more mature ecosystem, but it was stagnant,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh. People were no longer sharing knowledge. They were staying in their lane. So anybody that missed that opportunity, that rise, mm-hmm. was no longer finding opportunities to participate. And so they went there and said, all right, well, our three rules worked. Everybody was meeting in bars. People under 21 can't go to bars. So that wasn't inclusive. And they were inadvertently keeping women out of the scene. Because if you think about it, you're meeting in a bar for 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night. More likely, that's not as attractive, mm-hmm. especially if you have families, right? Mm-hmm. More the man's going to go, and the woman's going to. And so, some of the first events I saw were nothing but dudes. I was going, it doesn't look too diverse to me here. And, you know, so we started hosting them in a kids museum.
Okay.
Because then people can bring families.
Okay.
And it made it more, you know.
So currently right now, you can bring your families to these meetups and learn?
The Vegas Circle podcast is brought to you by RAC Financial. They help new and established businesses with simple, secure, and reliable payment processing. RAC's credit card merchant processing services are unmatched. Visit racfinancial.com today and mention Vegas Circle podcast.
So currently right now, you can bring your families to these meetups and learn?
It's inclusive.
Oh, okay.
It can be any age.
That's awesome.
You know, what the main focus in my mind was that social support system, so that, you know, parents, again, not competing, but parents can say, well, you know what? There's this Tech Alley that's every third, because it's consistent, every third Saturday of the month.
Okay.
And you can go there.
Awesome.
And they can learn and engage the scene. So there wasn't like, I don't know, you know, answer anymore. There was, there's a community there that can help support you and get you what you need. Yeah.
No, we need more of it. I mean, like Chris and I were talking about before. I mean, we're both from the Midwest, and it's nice to be able to see what's happening. And I love what Vegas is doing with people like yourself that are coming up with these different ideas and finding the need, and we need it. We need more of these.
I think Vegas is one of those cities, because it's still relatively small.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, I tell people, you know, so like what, 1970, Reno was bigger than Vegas. I'm still salty because we don't get our local discounts anymore. You know, the strip was begging for locals to come, to fill the slow season, and you know, we don't have that anymore. But I guess the point I'm saying is it's relatively slow. So, and because we've been really sort of pushed in one direction with our economy, which I still love. I mean, I love the resort industry. And so on. But you have now I think the city, the state groups are just aching for opinions, aching for somebody to take the lead. So the opportunity to influence direction is now. Mm-hmm. And so it's so awesome to be in a situation like that. I don't know where you can find that anywhere else.
Here.
That's what we always talk about. Culture in Vegas. We don't have that. Mm-hmm. Like the people that are trying to find what's our future mm-hmm. look like for Vegas. You know, we're growing rapidly. We're developing all this infrastructure, but we have to be we can't just be a one trick pony with hospitality. Yeah.
And that happened in like Nevada's history this whole entire mm-hmm. time. We've almost collapsed as a state. It's a silver till silver collapse.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
And then it was like agriculture or whatever. And then, you know, And that's why it's gambling. It's all the sins is because they're like, we have nothing else. Let's just make it. Let's just live off of,
for sure,
gambling and whatever else is out there.
I mean, we love it. It helps us with our state taxes, but still, we got to diversify.
I love it. But and I think you're going to start seeing that. And even when it comes to entrepreneurism, and that's why I think Las Vegas has become much more attractive. I mean, you guys might not know this, but there's 1,200 startups in Southern Nevada mm-hmm. that have an enterprise value of $40 billion.
Oh, wow.
No. And it skyrocketed in 2020 when everybody started coming here, I think, for sure. Right?
Yeah.
But it's one of those, it's just hidden because those bright lights
yep.
just sort of hide all the other stuff that are out there. I love the Arts District. You guys have probably been there. Downtown is beautiful thanks to, the efforts of Tony Shea and so on.
Did a great job.
Of course, you got the mountains. I mean, look at them today. They were gorgeous with the snow I tell the county and the city, you should probably have the slogan called "I had no idea," because of what everybody always says when you say, "Oh, wait, go a mile off the strip," and they go, "I had no idea this is Vegas."
Because you get caught up.
That should be North Las Vegas' motto.
Yeah. I have no idea, right? I mean, I'm like, I had no idea Boxable was in.
We had Paolo on our show. Yeah.
Paolo's
a good, great guy. Yeah. Yeah.
$1 billion whatever company is here in Las Vegas.
Paolo's amazing.
Badass.
What he's been able to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For
yeah.
Sure.
And so you're going to start seeing, I think, the casinos adopting more of a relationship with entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And, I think there's some walls are going to have to break down, the procurement wall and so on and so forth. But mm-hmm. I think they're going to have to in order to compete in the global economy. I think that as more and more cities and places are adopting gaming, as places like, I tell people this, DraftKings disrupted our entire industry that we owned because they found a more efficient way to gamble.
Yeah. And now they just opened up the headquarters in Uncommons. I don't know if it's open yet, but it's about to open any day now.
And Nevada fought it.
Mm. Even to this day, you can't go on like do daily sports betting through DraftKings in Nevada because you can only do it in other states.
It's very weird. Yeah. And this little company, I don't know how little it was, but this company outside of Nevada disrupted our entire industry, and now they're just like doing whatever they can to catch up with it.
Yeah.
And so I look at it and I say, well, this is why if you want to be competitive, we have to adopt. We have to start working with entrepreneurs. You can't just say no. We've always worked with these Fortune 500 companies. Entrepreneurs are going to disrupt. Why don't we disrupt our own industry and make people compete with us?
Yeah.
Right. I think that would be good. And I don't think it's going to be a bad thing. I think they said, I saw a report probably about 2018, I believe, where 60 or something percent of Nevada jobs are automatable. We're the highest impacted jobs place where jobs can be automated. And I don't think necessarily think it's a bad thing. Right. I hope that we can prevent a big disruption from a living sort of area, but as casinos adopt new ways, as our we can cater to our guests in a much more efficient and enjoyable fashion, as opportunities like jobs in the technology and entrepreneurism and disruption come about, I think that's going to be good for everyone here.
Yeah, we just keep getting better. I mean, I was, talking about earlier, I mean, that's why we built Vegas Circle, is because we wanted to show the light on business owners and entrepreneurs that are doing things not just on the Strip. You know, there's some very successful and sharp people that are here that are doing some amazing things. So
it's crazy.
I'm glad you're doing the same with being able to do the meetups with Tech Alley.
I'm just in it for the ride. It's a whole lot of fun. Like I said, I often joke and say I created Tech Alley so I can hang out with the with the smart people.
you learn a lot.
That's why I did this.
You learn a lot.
You learn a lot of the people that are good at business.
I tell I tell people I was at the coding school. I'll be real quick on how I started meeting up with startups. But I remembered, and again, come from a corporate world, more,
sure.
You want to stay away from risk, you know, and so on. But I remember my executive director was sort of lamenting about all these issues that we were having with the coding schools or something. I can't remember. And because really the state isn't that friendly, I suppose, to bring in new programs to the state. It's really weird. Anyway, as he's in here lamenting to a group of people, and this entrepreneur come up and he basically gave him a 5-why exercise. Why is that happening? Well, why? Why? Mm-hmm. And it was drilling down. And I was like, wow, that's freaking impressive. I mean, my jaw was like, look at this guy. He's really basically not taking any excuse other than it's you. Why aren't you solving something here? Mm-hmm. And anyway, I think that was my first like, wow, entrepreneurs are pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then when I really got involved was, as I was saying, we want to get these people into jobs. And I was always going after the casinos and Zappos and all these big names saying, hey, we really want you to hire people. And they were great folks. They gave great advice, but they weren't hiring anybody.
Yeah.
And so I said, let's stop chasing the pretty people. Let's go for the hungry people. Who are they? Mm-hmm. It was the startups. I started really engaging heavy with the startups and they started hiring people. And that's where I learned about why local entry-level developer talent isn't as attractive here. Because it costs $30,000 to $60,000 to allocate resources. And usually that talent jumps ship after a few, you know, six months of experience because they're worth more in the job market. Mm-hmm. But how can we mitigate that? And then that obviously that conversation became into Ionovate. And then
awesome.
And then that's how it all worked out.
Mm-hmm. You come up with great ideas, man. With us being a business show and business podcast, what would be business advice you would tell somebody that wants to get in business or, you know, whatever that would
sure.
be?
Sure. I used to have a thing on my wall that said, ideas are easy, execution is everything. So you just gotta do it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like going to the gym, right? You can read all the blogs and all the news things, get all the advice you want, but really it's get in the gym and lifting some weights or doing some push-ups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or as Terry Crews would say, just go in there, read a magazine and get used to going to the gym, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, and so I think first thing is you have to sort of say, okay, I'm executing it. It's no more of an idea. The next thing that I would say, and of course you got the whole playbook of what you should do your SWOT, do your market analysis, mm-hmm. whatever, or do what I do, just jump feet in and swim my way to. Yeah. But I tell people this. I said, get an advisory board.
Get an advisory board.
I've had a few companies in my life, but these last few ones, I've actually gotten an advisory board. And why? Because I want to be accountable to something, right?
Interesting.
So what I've done, even with my smaller ones, is I say, as an advisor, we're going to meet every month. We're going to go over the financials. We're going to go over strategy. Right. And then, of course, some other things in between. And if we reach these certain levels within 2 years, then you get a certain equity or maybe even some revenue share within the company. So they have a piece in the game. And for me, it's the accountable component. Mm-hmm. Because you know why? I'm not going to do my financials unless I have to go every month to show this board of two people. So there's at least a 3-vote sort of thing, you know, where we're at. Right. If not, I'll never. I had companies before. I never did my financials until tax season came. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
But now,
but it's holding you accountable every month or every quarter or whatever.
Yeah.
It is.
So now we can look over a P&L to say, all right, man, are we going in the right direction? What strategy? I'm counting on you guys to give me, you know, information, and they're counting on me because if we succeed, then they get a cut of the company.
So everybody wins.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. So you know, if anybody's going to start a company, that's one of the first things I would do is say, all right, let's get at least someone's going to hold me accountable. To make sure that I'm doing the right stuff. Because really it comes down to the financials, man. If you're not doing the financials, how are you ever going to judge if you're doing the right things? And I'll tell you one thing, you're going to make sure you bill. I remember my first company, I would never bill anybody. It was like in 2000 something. I had this little side gig, right?
You said you never billed
anybody? I was terrible at billing people. I do all the work and I'm like, oh.
No AP at all. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you know, that's back, you have to do everything on paper and stuff, right? But now, man, goddamn right, I'm going to charge everybody for everything I'm doing because I have to. I'm accountable for that.
It's funny. You remind me, and I'll share this a little bit because actually Leticia being in the room is, I remember Tiffany was talking about bookkeeping.
Yeah.
She owns multiple different businesses. And I remember we asked her, I said, what was one business advice? She said, learn bookkeeping.
Yeah.
Make sure your books are in
it's
order.
It's the lifeblood of any business.
Yeah, that was one of the best advice I had had. Remember Tiffany, it was good stuff. So
hit those P&Ls, man.
Yeah.
At the coding school, when I worked for the nonprofit and we started that coding school, it was struggling. And I tell people, that's where I got the idea. That executive director would send out P&Ls to everybody. Here's where everybody's at. And you know what? I hated and I loved those P&Ls. Yeah. I hated and I loved. Why?
Because
I hated
it's reality, though.
Because I was always under budget. I was not making budget. And I was embarrassed. Mm-hmm. But I loved them because I was like, I need to find a way to make us make money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and eventually I did. And it was, I mean, I tell you, I cried that day. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I finally did it, right? Because it was a struggle. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what I learned.
Yeah.
You know, those P&Ls, I mean, they're unbiased. Mm-hmm. And no one's picking on me. It's the truth. It's the books.
Yeah. It's the truth.
Yeah.
The profit and losses.
And so I'm looking at it going, I'm $100,000 down. Damn.
Yeah.
How do I fix that? And you had creative. To get creative. And I got creative. Yeah. You know, we put new programs together and eventually it worked out and I felt pretty good about myself.
That's good stuff, man. Being able to just pick your brain. We'll transition a little bit on favorite restaurant in Vegas. What would be, give us one that's a gem off the strip since we were talking about the strip and everything.
I mean, there's so many good ones here. I like Echo and Rig over there.
That's a good one. I've been there multiple times.
Tivoli. Yeah. Tivoli, thank you.
Tivoli.
And then there is another one on Rancho and Craig. Hey, I hate that I'm even saying it because, damn it, I can't remember. It's a nice Italian restaurant, though.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites. We were talking COVID not too bit ago, but that was the one we'd always go during COVID and get like the family meals and bring them out.
Good stuff.
Man. Oh, yeah, yeah. But
Echo Rig is in the area, too, so I'm trying to think of what you're referring
Echo
to.
Echo Rig is very good.
You've never been there?
No, I have. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, very good.
Are they actually making another location?
Are they really?
Okay. Yeah. I'm a big old-fashioned sort of fan. And they have like a bacon infused old fashioned.
Oh, wow.
Good
stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody ever said Echo and Rig. I'm trying to remember. I think one person brought it up, but that's a great restaurant.
Yeah. Sure. The meat's good. And then they have a little ice cream at the end. They did go all out.
Yeah, I've been wanting to go there just to go for the butcher. Like, I'm going to go there just to get my meat, just to get the butcher, not actually buy any food. I never get around to it.
No, it's good. There's so many good restaurants in Tivoli now that it changes. Yeah. So it's awesome.
And it's been around forever. Usually restaurants just. Mm-hmm.
They've stayed there.
I don't think they're too unreasonably priced either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else is up for you for, what are you concentrating for 2023 and maybe coming up, next year?
Business-wise?
Yeah, business-wise.
So we just launched in Tagli that you put on there. And that's actually a really cool story where, you remember I said ideas are everything, execution is, or ideas are easy, execution is everything. And I made a rule. I said, I'm not going to share an idea unless I'm going to execute on it. I don't want to be known as the idea guy.
Got it.
And so I was being... Because you know, you're hanging around entrepreneurs, you're throwing ideas around, and then you're going, well, am I going to do anything about that or not? So that's why I wrote that motto. And I said, I can quickly find myself overextended. So I was doing very, very good at it, concentrating on Tech Alley, concentrating on Ionovate. And then I had an opportunity to speak in front of city council about entrepreneurism. And I went up there and I told them that, if you look at STEM education, I said, and the four C's of STEM, which is collaboration, communication, critical thinking, and creative thinking, I said, our education system is teaching people how to be entrepreneurs because it's teaching them how to say, ask why, and then solve for why. Mm. And I said, so I have this dream that there are 3D printers in every library in Nevada because if a fourth grader is building a Lego set and they can't find the Lego they want, mm-hmm. I want them to know that I could solve that. I can go to the library.
Just make it.
And make it. Put it in. Solve it, right? I said, it's going to fortify the education system that's being built. And then I said, well, damn it. I'm going to make that happen.
That's awesome. My kids are going to love you because I'm losing stuff all the time, man. So
I started going to libraries and checking out their makerspaces and finding out, well, they're paid for by grants and they're restricted by age. So only like teenagers can use them up to a certain point. And so to me, I said, well, there goes that idea about the fourth grader coming up and using it for a library. Mm-hmm. And then two, they had these 3D printers that, no one was using because no one knew how to use them. So they're sort of sitting there. And so I was trying to find out how to make it easier for libraries to use 3D printers and get those out to everybody. And to get to the long story short, I mean, after all of these like no's, impossible, so on and so forth, I eventually was in Reno at UNR giving a whiteboard demonstration of why the university should take the orders from the libraries and print them at their bigger makerspace. Mm. And I was like going down there, telling me no. And eventually I said, why don't you cluster and work with other people? Because the whole thing was, we got to buy more printers. I said, why don't you cluster and work with another group? And I said, why don't we Uberfy 3D printers? And I circled that bad boy and said, that's the winner, right?
Uberfy, yeah.
And so what Intagli does is that we are basically just the facilitator, if you want to, or the conduit for people that need 3D printing services to connect with people who have 3D printers in their homes.
Mm. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And so obviously with libraries, they don't have to own 3D printers anymore. We'll just connect them to a bunch of people and then get them that product back. So we control the order, the selection of the person in the community that has a 3D printer, and then the delivery to the customers. Yeah. And if you guys read Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Of course, yeah. Robert Kiyosaki. I was just listening to him last night.
Tell people, if I would have listened to that guy, book, or read that book when I was a teenager, my life would be 100% different right now. Passive income, I didn't even grasp it, right?
Like the cash flow quadrant. They should be teaching that in every school.
And everything's a liability until it's making you money. Mm-hmm. So that's why you look at 3D printers. It's sitting in everybody's corners. Mm-hmm. They buy them, they whatever. But now
they're not cheap either. So they're not making you any money.
Making people money, right? And you're seeing these people with 3D printers going, yes, thank you. Finally. Now I have a reason to do it, right? And so they're attracted to it. Libraries and schools are attracted to it because now they can offer services without having to own that printer, because they thought, I just have to have it because that's what STEM education is. No, you don't have to have it. STEM education is creating that cat, that 3D model. Printing is boring, right? and so we can facilitate that. And then recently, someone at CES forgot one of their parts in their country for one of their demonstrations, and said, "Hey, anybody know about a 3D printer?" And I happen to have a friend there, and he goes, "Using Tagly, they ordered this part. They thought it would be $500. It cost $5.50.
Oh, wow!
And it was crucial to their thing. And they were like, "This is awesome!" And me and my partner looked at each other and went, we better go B2C real quick.
That's good.
And so that's what we did as well. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
You're making some waves, man. Yeah. We're going to be paying attention. We got to check out one of these tech alleys. You said it's every third Saturday of the month.
Every third Saturday. And this coming up one in April 15th, we're actually partnering with a group called the National Center for Women in Information Technology, NCWIT.
Okay.
And every year they give an awards event where they recognize young women in middle school and high school for their accomplishments in IT or technology. And last year they did 130. I think they have about that much this year. So we're partnering with them. They're going to be given an award during that event. So it should be a lot of fun. And we're actually hosting a launch party. And this is something we started doing at Tech Alley back in April of last year, where I said, any new startup that launches their product, we're going to host a launch party for them, because we should celebrate that.
Yeah, good.
Right? Okay. And I think that any startup that does it, they should experience the joy of bringing something to market and having the community cheer on them, because the chances are, you guys know this, that the startup's going to fail, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not the first idea that I think we're all banking on. It's your 6th, 7th, 10th idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we want you to keep trying that and having that urge. And so, but in this instance, we're actually celebrating the launch of Intagly. So we're going to throw in a launch party from 4 to 6 right after Intagly over at Taverna Castera for Intagly. It should be a ton of fun.
Awesome. Well, appreciate hanging out with you, John. Yeah, this is good stuff, man.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it too.
A little bit, man. So we appreciate you. Check us out at thevegascircle.com. So thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, man.
Thank you. Yeah.